Blog Talk Radio.
Man, I'm so hyped right now. Anything's possible. Anything's possible!
RSD Renegade Radio. Where real guys talk real sports. Allow me to introduce the illustrious three-man booth.
I want winners.
What's your name, boy?
Mark the Game Changer.
What's your name, boy?
D-Well.
Now, ladies and gentlemen.
T.O.T. Sports Ph.D.
The world famous.
Ray.
They are who we thought they were.
We need more dollars.
RSG, Renegade Radio. The plug is about to open.
Everybody has an opinion.
The man must have a code.
You're taking RSG to the next level.
Hello. You play to win the game.
You could gripe about Mike's game, but I don't see shooting percentage being it.
I mean, I'm not griping the third overall player on my list.
Is it safe?
Now, I blame it on Nintendo. It's provocative. Because we don't make excuses. You know, we're not going to make any excuses.
You need to move more like a dog. We don't need a bunch of cats in here. Yeah, looking in the mirror. Do I look good? I got my extra bands on. I got my other shoes. Oh, be a dog. Can't wait. Can you dig it, sucker?
Right. Welcome to the Real Sports Guys. We're real guys talk real sports. I'm your host for the evening, D. Wilson. And on this historic day, before we begin, we do want to take a moment to remember 9/11 in the RSG way. You know, as we jump into the show, I think particularly on this special day, you know, hopefully for the next few hours for those, you know, I know in talking to a lot of folks today, there are a lot of folks who are impacting and thinking about where they were on 9/11 and 11 years ago. Hopefully for these few hours we can take you away from some of those thoughts and those memories and to really get into what we like to do, sports. And so before I jump in, you know, I'm going to be at the point for the game changer tonight. But to the left, I'm kind of rotating. I'm like the Joe Dumars tonight. I moved from two guards to point. But we always got Mr. Reliable, 15-10, 15-11, Phil Sports PhD. How you doing tonight?
You play to win the game.
That's what I'm talking about, fellas. Playing to win the game tonight. I'm looking forward to riding with you, Devon. Passenger side, passenger seat. You know, if you need music, if you need navigation help, I'm there. I'm there.
That's what I can, you know, Phil is like that. He's like that cat that just, you know, he's like that great wing guy. He's there. He's up there. He's like, it's like playing with Pippen, you know, it's like playing, you know, with down in the post with McHale. It's a guy that you can always count on is going to be there down the stretch. So, hey, I'm glad you're there helping out, keeping the show moving. And Game Changers is taking the night off, involved doing a lot of different things as we do. We are not only real sports guys, we are family guys. But we have a special guest from inside the park with us tonight, Hank Davis, also known as Mr. Wolverine. What's up, Hank?
Hey, that's right. Go Blue. I'm here tonight. I'm your pinch hitter. I'm your utility player. I play all the positions. I'll bat first. I'll bat last. I'll bunt. I'll steal. Whatever you need, I'm here.
Now, they're going to learn a lot about Hank. You know, if you haven't had a chance to listen to Inside the Park, part of the RSG network, it's on 8:30 Wednesday night, Central Time, 9:30 Eastern. Hank is incredible with RJ and Mike. But you're going to learn a lot about Hank's diversity and the things that he knows beyond baseball. This guy is highly talented, and we're going to enjoy having you on the show tonight. We got a fun-filled show, and we're going to have a lot of football tonight. You know, we got to talk about Roger Goodell. You know, yeah, Game Changer's not here, but this is in the spirit of Game Changer, because we know Game Changer gave him his name, the habitual line stepper. And we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about the habitual line stepper tonight, and we're going to get into that real
quick. That gets me every time. That title gets me every time.
I like that.
Only it's a phrase that only the Game Changer can come up with, but we're going to honor him tonight, and we're going to really get into what do we do with Mr. Roger Goodell. We're going to talk NFL. It's been a great first week. The game we love is back, and so we're going to explore all aspects of the first week of the NFL and really get in that. We're going to spend some time talking about college football and really getting to understand what's going on with college football, as well as talking about some of the stories that are in the news. Some of you folks have maybe had a chance to watch the Ward fight and how that went this past weekend. It was an incredible fight this weekend. I mean, Ward is definitely extended in terms of his time as a pound for pound. He fought Dawson, who's a legitimate fighter, and we'll talk a little bit about that. They sit down in Strasburg. We got Hank in the building. We got to get an opinion on that. You know, he's a legendary guy. I know he's got an opinion. I know I've heard it. He'll share that. And so we'll have a whole bunch of things we'll be covering. Just come along with us on the ride. But you know how we like to jump this off with what we call the funky editorial.
Fellas, one thing we need to say. Shall we say it, y'all? Melvin,
right.
Jimmy, Coleman, Ryan, say it.
Yeah.
Everybody want to get funky one more time.
Tonight's funky editorial, as I said before, is focused. We got a bullseye on the habitual line stepper, Roger Goodell. As you know, a three-judge panel overturned the ruling against Jonathan Vilma, who was adamant and felt like there wasn't due process. That sent a ripple effect across the airwaves and really raised a lot of questions, not only about Roger, about process. You know, players have been complaining that he's been definitely overstepping his lines. But we want to begin, fellas. The first question I guess I want to ask, did the judges get it right? Maybe I'll go to you. I'll go to you, Phil, PhD, sports PhD.
Yeah, I think they did get it right. I think the judges did get it right. The judge got it right. Because, and correct me if I'm wrong, we still don't know what this evidence and proof that the NFL had or has. We still don't know what it is, right?
Well, what the NFL would say and what Roger would say is that we gave the players an opportunity to come in and have a pre-discussion about this, but the Players Association advised them not to come in. And so Roger would say we would have laid all the evidence out to them if they had come in, but they didn't come in for an interview early on so that we could provide the evidence. So that would be, I would say, the league's counter to this accusation that they didn't know the evidence. I think that's been their counter. And I think maybe the judges present, whether they come in or not, you got to present something to them before you lay down whatever your sanctions are, whether they come in and interview in the office or not. But the league, I think, in their opinion, believe that they gave the players every opportunity and the coaches to come in and see the evidence that was being presented against them. Hank, what's your opinion about the judges?
I thought the judges got it absolutely right. And I think the reason why so much was Jonathan Vilma's. You know, he was just adamant that he was not guilty. Not so much we said he was not guilty, but, I mean, it just seemed to me, just from looking at it from the outside, looking in, that he didn't receive due process. I didn't see it. You didn't hear anything from anybody coming out against Vilma, even when Vilma was making all that noise. All you heard was Roger Goodell basically say, you know, we got enough stuff to suspend him for the year. Now, you know, it's real funny that now you hear that that they're going to meet later on, and that all the players are looking for a fair meeting with Goodell. But I'm not necessarily, you know, sure about that. And it seems to me, you know, again, that I don't think this is over. I think that Goodell may feel that his authority has been usurped somehow. So I don't think this is over yet, even though, but I believe the justice got it right, but I don't think it's over yet.
Well, and that's an interesting twist on it. You know, Hank, I want to continue with you on this. You know, the commissioner, one of the things that they said is that the commissioner he was acting outside the scope of his authority.
Mm-hmm.
So if he were to go back and review it and find something that he could act on that was within the scope of his authority, do you think politically he should do it? Would it look like he's looking vindictive? Because you said it sounded like he usurped his authority, which he could view that, but could it also be looked at as, if he did continue down this line, as he's being vindictive? What do you think about that?
Here's what I think. I think that what Goodell is trying to do is he's trying to come across like he's trying to save the NFL, which doesn't need to be saved. It sounds to me like he's trying to make sure that the game is fair, above board, and that all of these things are done and that all of the players are Boy Scouts. And, you know, he's turning it into a wussy league, if you ask me. It seems like if you stub your toe or say ouch the wrong way, he's going to suspend you. You know, and that kind of pisses me off, actually. But I do believe that I don't believe he feels like if he does anything about it that he looks bad or politically looks bad, because his angle is going to be that he has to protect the NFL from itself. I mean, that's the way I look at it. He's trying to protect it from itself. So any dirty nastiness or anything like that, he's gonna put a stop to it. Just look at how he deals with players, you know, with off season or off field incidents.
Well, if you look at it, and Phil, maybe I look at that. You know, do you feel, in terms of there have been accusations about, we call him a habitual line stepper, so we obviously believe he either is close to the line or he stepped over the line. I think we all been kind of in that camp. What do you think his next move should be if you're a commissioner? If you were the commissioner, what would you, given that you've had this public, basically what I would call the Tayshaun Prince to Reggie Miller moment? It looked like the layup was going in, but we slapping it off the glass.
That's right. Well, I think this is a critical time for Goodell from a PR standpoint, not for only his personal legacy, but also the league. And I think this is the opportunity where he could come out and say, hey, we got this one wrong. And I think if he says something along those lines, that's really going to add a lot of credibility to him with the players. But I don't think they're going to do that. In fact, Stephen A. Smith, he read a memo that went out from the league to the teams. And in that memo, it pretty much says that this court decision does not change the NFL's position at all. It doesn't change the evidence. You know, and I think this would have been a perfect opportunity for the NFL to kind of take a step back and to try to say, hey, you know, we're not saying we're completely wrong, but there were some things in this process that we could have did better. And this could have been a great healing opportunity to heal the relationship between the players' union and the NFL. But unfortunately, I don't think Goodell's going to take that route. I really don't.
One of the things that, I mean, one of the biggest criticisms that Goodell was taking in terms of due process is that he's the judge, jury, and executioner.
That's right.
Right. And so, you know, I know you're an organizational theorist. This is your background. Would it make more sense to him to have some type of arbitration or some type of third-party panel of, you know, ex-referees, coaches, you know, and ex-players, you know, something that would be a good mix? Does that make sense to him to at least be part of the appeals process?
Yes, I believe it would make sense, Devon, but come on now. I mean, your job, my job, our job, whatever it is, I'm not going to volunteer to my boss or whoever, like, listen, I need to defer some of my power and responsibilities to someone else. I mean, that typically just is not going to happen, especially when you're, you know, one of the highest paid commissioners in sports. I don't remember the exact number, but this guy is making close to $20 million a year. So I think for him to defer some of that power, unfortunately, I just don't see that as realistic for that to be his call. Now, it might come down to another third party like this judge forcing the NFL or Goodell to develop something like that. Because theoretically, it just doesn't make sense. And, you know, unfortunately, the players agreed to this unilateral power that they gave Goodell, but that's a high regret at this point.
So in some things, the Player Association, Hank, let me put over this. Does the Player Association deserve some blame because they had an opportunity to negotiate this issue and they kind of just let it fly?
They absolutely have a lot of blame to this because, see, again, you got him being judge, jury, executioner, so whatever he says goes. Now you got to go get a three-judge panel to basically overturn the commissioner when he can still come back and get you. I think that they should have had some sort of arb committee or something that they should have negotiated, especially when you think about the NFL and what Goodell has been able to do in handing down suspensions and basically going over teams, if he wishes, to hand down suspensions on players. And I think that, you know, when that sort of thing happens, that, you know, a player doesn't really have a whole lot of power to appeal. And I think this is what Jonathan Vilma was getting to. You know, I'm going to try to appeal my suspension. I don't feel like it's right. Goodell says, too bad. You know, then you've got to go through all of these other different ways. And I believe that the Players Association missed the boat there. They have to also look at, you know, how the NFL is being run and try to protect their players when they have situations like this. I mean, this was a franchise problem with what went on with the Saints, and he was ready to just hack everybody from the owner all the way down if he could have. And you really did not hear a whole lot about evidence, and the coaches and stuff don't have any protection in that regard. So, yeah, the Players Association should have did a lot more.
Yeah, because, I mean, in some senses, this is a player safety issue. Players are suing. You have some of your ex-players suing the league because of health-related issues that they're incurring later in life. Goodell is coming down hard because this is something that contributes to that. And so in some ways, he's coming down in a way that is addressing player safety and trying to send a message to protect players from players. So in some ways, he's helping players, yet there's pushback on it. So that's an interesting thing. And where are the players' responsibility in this? You know, even though Jonathan Vilma may have not done all of what he was accused of being done. So that's something to think about. The one twist with this is that what do you do with some of the coaches? You got Sean Payton, some other folks out there. Should this thing have been extended beyond that?
I mean, again, like I said, it's almost like any organization you work for. If you have worked for an organization that has a labor union, then the labor union is going to protect the workers. Unfortunately, the administrative staff may not have that same level of due process, and that's basically what happened here with the Saints. You've got the Sean Payton who was overseeing this, and you have the coaches that basically kind of, you know, orchestrated this whole bounty thing. Those guys really don't have a leg to stand on. So even though they may try to go out here and try to appeal, which I believe Payton and Wilson tried to do, basically, Goodell comes back to say, well, you know, I can make it say I can ban you for life. What you going to do? What do you have to stand on? Mm-hmm. You know, so it's almost like they got to bite the bullet. It's worse for them. You look how meekly Sean Payton went away. I mean, that to me, he didn't say nothing. I mean, even if he was wrong, you figured he didn't say something. You know, I was abducted by aliens when they decided to do that. I missed the whole thing. Anything. Protect yourself.
What do you think about the coach's position, Phil?
Hank laid it out there. I'm just going to pass on that one. Everything he said.
So where do we go from here? I mean, we obviously, you could put one in the column for the players. Do you see players using the legals, you know, you take somebody like James Harris who feel like he's, you know, he's being targeted. He's injured now, but he feels like he's been unfair, and he just basically have used the bully pulpit to say whatever he needs to say to respond to it. But do you see players using the legal system in other ways when they get these sanctions? Do you see this as a trend, or do you think that Jonathan is this isolated case? Do you see other players using the legal system?
Yeah, the bully has been exposed. It's kind of like on Friday when Craig took out Debo. Okay? Debo no longer, he's flawed at this point. And so the bully has been exposed, you know, kind of like that Simpsons episode when Bart exposed the bully. I forget the bully's name. So at this point, moving forward, I mean, Goodell's going to have a hard time getting anything done in terms of player discipline that he does not have hard, cold evidence or the legal system behind him. You know, if a player gets a DUI or whatever it is, okay, fine. Okay, Goodell's going to have control to do whatever he wants in that situation. But anything, I mean, even drug tests, okay, banned substances, I think you're going to see a lot more pushback on that. I mean, even what we saw with Ryan Braun in the major leagues this past off season, when you pair that with what's going on with Goodell and really questioning his power, you know, I think we're going to see a lot of players in their legal representation see some holes in this defense. So that's why I think it's best for Roger to try to figure out, okay, let's make this a healing moment. Let's make this a moment where we can come together and reestablish some things. The system is broken. You know, I had carte blanche for way too long, and I enjoyed it, but now let's try to figure something out proactively instead of having the legal system step in and make the NFL and Goodell make some changes.
Well, that this is a topic and this is a story that will be percolating. It will be the underbelly, kind of threw a little wrench into the kickoff of, you know, to the NFL season. I was excited, you know, NFL ticket, red zone. This is with the backdrop, but then the season started. And so I want to transition. That's the backdrop, but now the season starts. It's been a crazy first week. I want to get your initial reactions. Hank, what was your initial reaction to the first full weekend of the NFL football season?
Well, you know, I, like everybody else, was really excited to see, you know, how RG3 was going to perform, how Luck was going to perform. And you know what? I think that both those young players look real good. I think RG3 is going to be somebody we need to watch all year long. You know, I think he's taking the league just like Cam Newton did last year. And I watched that Saints game. And I think that you have to kind of like see how you was kind of wondering how was the Saints going to respond after all of this turmoil. How are they going to respond? That was one of the most exciting games of the week, in my opinion, with the Redskins coming out on top. But I think the other piece of yesterday that shocked the hell out of me, it was the Jets. And the Jets are hanging all those points on the Bills, which probably is going to be the worst team in the NFL this year. But the fact that Mark Sanchez showed that he had a pulse and that, you know, that he grew a pair, knowing that the season was going to start, and like, you know what, I'm not going to, you know, succumb to all this foolishness, and I'm going to be the leader of this team. Now, granted, it was against the Bills, but I thought that was pretty impressive. I thought what the Niners did at Lambeau was amazing. You know, that they're coming out and they're looking like a team to be reckoned with this year. I think we all thought they were going to be. But the fact that they walked into Lambeau, of course, now this is September and it's not frozen tundra yet. So, you know, that makes the Packers vulnerable. But I thought that just those three games there, you know, it makes you very excited for the NFL. But what about all the points that were scored yesterday? I mean,
yeah,
it was
a lot of points.
My God. I mean, did they practice defense this summer? I mean, 40 points these three times. I was like, golly. I'm like, man, they done turned it to college football all of a sudden.
I mean, they were ringing up. I was like, my goodness. I said, oh, this is something else. Yeah, I looked. I was like 48. That was the scoring was out of control. I can tell you where the change in the rules has helped the offense early in the season to get out on top. Phil, what were your initial reactions?
Peyton Manning, man. I've never been a huge Peyton Manning fan. I mean, never disliked him, but never been a huge fan. Always respected what he did and the way that he went about how he did everything in Indianapolis. But I couldn't help myself from pulling for the Broncos Sunday night when they beat the Steelers. Sorry, Devon, I hate to say that out loud.
Look at that. No, look at listen to that. Come on now. Well, I understand. I could. It was something you had to embrace.
It was, man.
He was on his thing, man.
You know, he has something to prove, man. And I tell you what, Peyton Manning, like, he did not miss a beat. I mean, he was flawless out there. And what's so incredible to me is to see how one player can transform a team who struggled to be effective in the pass game last year with Tebow. Pretty much the same personnel, a few minor differences, okay, as far as numbers, but major impact when you look at Peyton Manning. And to me, Peyton Manning's performance yesterday reminded everybody why he should be in the discussion of one of the top 10 quarterbacks to ever play this game.
Absolutely.
And I think you're right on in that. That was good to see that weekend. You know, as much as it was against my Steelers and I was nervous, I knew that was going to be a tough game for them not having Ryan Clark, because I think you need everyone to go up against Peyton Manning. But one of the things that John Elway was saying in the midst of the Tebow mania last year, he said to go to the Super Bowl, you have to be able to convert on third down. I don't know if y'all remember that. I mean, that's one of the things he kept saying, that's something that great quarterbacks do. They move the chains. They keep drives alive. And what Peyton demonstrated is when you have someone, and that this weekend is you have someone who thinks the game, he wasn't just creating with his arm but with his mind when he was controlling the run game. He would force the Steelers to show what they were doing, and he'd make an adjustment and outflank them on a run and allow for them to get the advantage on the numbers. And that was just him thinking and moving the chess pieces. So, yeah, that was for me was a great thing. And then this weekend also reminded me that you can't put too much stock in the preseason. That, you know, all the stuff we hear about what people do in the preseason, and I think the Jets were really good evidence of it, that there are some things that you can look at in the preseason. There's some things you just got to discount. And the other thing about the first weekend is that you can't get too excited about the first weekend. Because, you know, people draw a lot of conclusions about the first weekend, but our past with a couple Super Bowl champions barely made the playoffs, struggled early on, came on hot towards the end. So you can't also make too many decisions about that first weekend. But there are some things that I thought were, you know, some key kind of elements in trends to the first weekend. And I want to play a little something with both of y'all, kind of a stock up, stock down. You know, we're trying to come out of a recession, you know, and, you know, PhD, you got background in kind of banking and understanding that kind of stuff. You know, people are trying to figure out what to do with their investments, you know, trying to figure out, you know, which stocks to build, you know, build a portfolio, you know, how to shape it all up. And so I want to play a stock up, stock down game with both of y'all. From a team perspective, when you looked at this weekend, name one or two teams that are their stock for you went up after you watched them this weekend. Phil, I'll start with you.
I want winners.
Winners. Stock up. I'm going Broncos stock up. I'm also going to go Steelers stock up. And that may surprise some people. But when you look at it, they were only one or two plays away, man. And I'm not sure there was a team in this league that was going to beat Peyton Manning and the Broncos this first opening week. I just don't think there is. And I saw a lot of good things out of that Steelers team, man, especially they were missing one of their top two dogs on defense. Offensively, you have Mike Wallace out there. He'd only been with the team for a couple of days. They're missing Mendenhall. So I think the Steelers are still going to have a really good season. Stock down for me, the Bengals. You know, it's one thing to lose to the Ravens on opening night. It's another thing to go into the locker room down 17-10 and get outscored 27-3 in the second half. That's a problem, man, for a team that I expected to take the next step. If you remember my fearless predictions a few weeks ago, actually, I think playoffs and the Ravens not. So, really disappointed with the Bengals, man.
I agree. Hank, your stock up. Stock down.
Stock up. I got a couple of them. I got to go with the Dallas Cowboys. Dallas has kind of quietly beat the daylights out the defending champs in New York. They struggled beating New York, if you recall, the last couple of seasons when they came right on out. They looked very impressive, too. They, now, you know, you know we still have that Romo factor, but for the first week, if they play like that, you know, majority of the season, stock up, you've got to look at the Dallas Cowboys. They look very good, very impressive. And then the other one, I've got to give it to Mark Sanchez and the Jets. You know, I expected them to play decent defense, but the fact that they were slinging the ball all over the field and they basically screamed out loud it was going to go ground and pound, you know, that was impressive to see. And if they play like that, and make themselves balanced like that, they all of a sudden become, you know, a force over there in the AFC. Knocked down, I got to go with Phil. I was absolutely stunned at how bad Cincinnati looked off defensively. You know, they here's a team that was a playoff contention, a playoff team sneaking in, and they just didn't look like they were ready to play. And that's a problem. I mean, you don't want to put a whole lot into the first week, but you've got some strong teams over there in the AFC that if you're going to play like that, you're going to be done real quick.
And, you know, I was in a sense, I think in my I felt like they were going to have that sophomore slump. I felt like Dalton and A.J. Green, you know, and we went back and forth on this. I just felt like Cincy out of that group, they could make it, but I felt like they're going to have the biggest struggle. And particularly when they got rid of Benson,
right?
You know, because I think what they did was they missed Benson. They missed that ability because they got Ben Jarvis right now, right?
Yeah.
But he's not Benson. I mean, Benson's a ramrod, you know, and move the chains, and so I just felt like they missed some identity. Last night, but I was very disappointed. I thought they would at least put up a better fight. They usually play them pretty tough, and so you know that was pretty difficult. I want to come back and look at some of the stock up, stock down, but let me get mine out there. My stock up was the 49ers, and what I appreciate is Lambeau Field is one of the toughest places to play. Playing against a team that came off of 15-1, had a lot to prove. Had touted that they upgraded their defense. And Jim Harbaugh, and I know this hurts you, Hank, because I know in Ann Arbor they wanted Harbaugh to end up over there and run that stuff over there. And I'm with you. I grew up there. You know, we love the Harbaugh family.
That's right.
But Jim Harbaugh, the 49ers, they beat you. And we're going to talk boxing. They beat you like Marvin Hagler. Body blows. Physical, they don't just beat you. They take your will, and I saw them intimidating folks in Green Bay. And I was just thinking, well, Alex Smith, is he gonna really? But he's the perfect quarterback for them. And it feels like I like where they're going. They just got a solid foundation, just solid, and like their coach. And so That's a stock up for me. I'm just impressed. And the Ravens. You know, I've been on Joe Flacco. If anybody who listened to the show long enough, I don't believe in it. But he's won. But that no huddle offense, the way he played, and I think Flacco had a talk in the offseason, especially after those Ed Reed comments, where basically, and I argued about this last year, I felt like there are times, and I know the Jets do this, there are times that some of these defensive teams that they do things that hamper the offense because they're trying to accentuate the defense, that their skill set and development of their offense might be able to produce more, but because they kind of built this persona that they want to win games 13-9, you never really see the true opportunities for the offense. I think you really saw that role reversal with them, and I think that's for real. I think Flacco is going to have a real good season. They're going to be tough to beat in that division. If he gets, he's got all the skill set. Could he believe that he could make the plays? I think in the way they beat him down again. I mean, physically, Ed Reed had an interception touchdown. He passed my boy Woodson for the most yards for return yards for interceptions. He set the mark. You know, they won 11 straight games, I believe, at home. I mean, they're establishing a home field kind of advantage. They forced Dalton into, what, 4 interceptions or sacked him 4 times. And, you know, he's only been sacked 14 times all year last year. So their defense was playing. The offense was moving. Stock down. I'm surprised y'all didn't say this. The Eagles.
I'm going to say this.
Huh?
What?
Did you say that?
I argue that one.
You argue that one?
Yeah.
I argue that one too.
The Eagles. And the reason why I'm saying the Eagles is that, first of all, they're a much better team than Cleveland. I think Cleveland is a rebounding weapon. But you just cannot pass the ball 56 times when you have LeSean McCoy. I mean, I think Andy Reid gets a pass too many times for just, I don't know what it is. He gets a pass. It's like he got pictures of somebody. But he gets a pass too much on how he calls games. But you can't win throwing the ball 56 times when you got LeSean McCoy, one of the top 3-4 running backs in the league. And Vic throws 4 interceptions. Can't do that. Other stock down. And we can argue about that Philly one in a minute. Other stock down, the Bills. As much as they invested on defense, to go in there and take a whooping like that from the Jets, when, you know, everybody was thinking the Bills, people put more stock in the Bills than they did Cincinnati, and the Bills just basically laid an egg defensively. And the Bills are a disappointment. I know they had Jackson went down injured. I saw the play, and Spiller came in. But Spiller still had some nice yards, but their defense just did not show up. So those are mine. So what do y'all say about the Eagles? I'm going to give you – Phil, you said that you had an objection to that.
Yeah, so first of all, I think the Browns are a much better team than people give them credit for. Now, people are only giving them credit for 3-4 games they're going to win. I think they're closer to a 6 or 7 win team, especially on the defensive side of the ball. I think they have a pretty decent defense. So that doesn't overly concern me. First game of the season, stuff happens. You know, Cleveland, man, that's a tough place to play in, especially on opening day when fans have that optimism out there. Now, I don't have a problem with them throwing the ball 56 times when Sean McCoy ran it 20, and overall the team ran the ball close to actually 30 times for the whole game. So I don't really have a problem with that because – you have to remember, that's how bad the Browns' offense was. You know, I was listening this morning. I think they had around 60 offensive plays. 55 of them had two yards or less. Okay, so I don't have a problem with Philadelphia passing the ball that much. I mean, that's what they do. You know, at this point, you have recruited and signed your personnel to play a certain way. Right or wrong, that's what your personnel does. So in some ways, I was impressed that McCoy got the ball 20 times on the ground for 110 yards.
But it's 20 times. It's how they do the runs. It's not the 20 runs he got. It's how they set his run package up. That's a problem. It's almost like they run because, damn, we got to run. Right? It's not running because running is an essential part of what we're trying to do offensively. Right? That's the problem that I have with Philly is that, yeah, the Browns are great, but the Browns aren't Vic four interceptions great. Some of that is decision making. Some of that is as a team, defensively, I think they're doing their thing. I mean, they were the liability last year defensively. I think they've been shoring that up towards the middle to end of the season. But offensively, that offense, I don't care how good the Browns is. When you look at the players that the Philly got on that offense, they still should not be holding Philly down like that.
Now,
that's what I'm saying. To be a top two, three different teams. Go ahead. Come on in. Bring the perspective.
Listen, one game does not a season make, okay? And I think what you got to look at with Philly right now is, first of all, the defense was sound. Secondly, I think that you're still trying to find your way. You're trying to do some things with Michael Vick, perhaps, that maybe, you know, as they move down the season a little bit more, they don't do. I think that, you know, starting the season on the road but still coming up with a win, I believe Philly's going to raise a lot of hell in the East this year. Again, because they were playing spoiler, they figured it out the last four games of the year last year, and I expect them to really figure it out this year. I have a real hard time saying that they're stocked down because I think they're going to be there all season. I just believe that when one game does not a season make. I think that they have to look at some things, and you're right, they look good, but I don't think that you just stock them down for that.
But do you think that Mike Vick's decision-making, you know, they talked about he's evolved. He was making some decisions that took him back before last year. I mean, 2 years. I mean, you know, his decision-making in there, I thought my sense was he advanced beyond that type of decision-making.
Michael Vick is what he is. He was what we thought he was, okay? He's not going to be that pocket passer they've been trying to make him be, okay? What makes Michael Vick good is his ability, his elusivity to get out, you know, from the pocket, and you got to watch out for him. And then he can get the ball down the field. If Philly believes they can let him sit in the pocket, they're going to be in trouble. And you're right, he's not going to make those right decisions. He's the pro version of Denial Robinson.
And I think that's the part. I mean, the whole thing is that he's evolved. This offense is going to be, you know, a little bit more sophisticated. It felt like, and Phil, I agree. I think Cleveland is one of the sound. I mean, I think they're making sound decisions to really develop the foundation of their program to get back to what fans in Cleveland expect. I agree, and they're doing the right thing. They're starting on the defensive side of the ball. And I'm not saying that this should be in one of those 41-13 games. You know, I think sometimes with crap, but I thought this should at least been a 28-13, you know.
Yeah, I think you'd be
20-21 in terms of even being a struggle back and not a Mike Vick four interception kind of out. If you told me Mike Vick was going to have four interceptions, damn near five, they're going to have five turnovers, their offense is going to sputter like that, I would say that that's a bad opening for Philly, especially after what they went through last year. That doesn't sound like a focused team.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I can't disagree with you there. You know, if it was a 1 point game, a one possession game minus the turnovers, yeah, I'm with you completely there. You know, I just have an issue with you know, saying that they didn't run the ball, which I think they did pretty effectively. You know,
And my running the ball is, if we got to analyze this, my running the ball for them, Phil, is that they don't feel like you're running with intention as part of the offense. I'm trying to give you an example of a team that might do that with some intention. They don't run it. They don't feel like they run it as part of the game plan. They run it because I don't know if it's a change. It doesn't feel like it's Andy Reid feel like he's running. He's frustrated that he's running the ball. Am I missing it or am I missing that point? I understand the 20 runs, but you've been around football a long time. You can run 20 times without intention. Without really part of the game plan, right? Not feeling as though you're committed to running, right?
That's the part. Like when your lead dog runs 20 times for 110 yards at 5.5 yards a clip. I don't think there's a coach in this country that's going to care about what the intention was.
We're gonna keep working that one. I'm gonna spend time watching the Andy Reid running the football because this is gonna be something we're gonna mark on the web because either he must have gone to church and found a new religion, but I tell you. It cost Donovan McNabb his career. Everybody blamed him. And I always felt like it was because people didn't buy in the fact that Philly would run the ball. So it was easy to just run past things and go. I mean, they benefited a little bit on the screen game and things like that. That's when they ran a really good screen game. But I just think they're gonna struggle. And I think that's the best way to keep Michael Vick healthy.
Hey, man, you've been hard on Randy. I mean, you've been hard on Andy Reid, man, since RSG came on in April 2010. So, I mean, you just think this guy gets a free pass way too much.
I just feel it, and I'm sorry. And I like, as hard as I appreciate him on one side as a coach, and I respect him a lot, but I do feel like he gets a free pass. I'll leave that alone. I did bring up the Bills, and I want to get your reaction on the Bills. In their opening week. I mean, didn't the Bills come in with some hype? And, but Hank, you didn't get a chance to predict. What were you thinking the Bills would do this year? Did you just think they were not going to be a great team? But where did you think the Bills are going to be this year?
Look, I didn't think that the Bills had enough star power to really compete in the East. I thought that they would raise some hell and make it fit for everybody. But I really wasn't sold on the Bills. I thought they'd be okay. But I just thought they would be, hovering around 500. But like I said before, I think they're going to be probably one of the worst teams in the league this year.
Okay. And, Phil, what did you think about the Bills? Where did you pick them in any contention, or did you think they were going to have a relapse? I can't remember when we had that conversation.
I thought they'd be fighting for a playoff spot.
Okay.
And
they still could be. Go ahead.
Yeah.
How did you feel about their opening weekend?
They looked horrible. They looked horrible, and they looked horrible against the Jets, which just makes it front page news.
And like it puts you on American Idol on it when you look horrible against the Jets. You're going to be on ESPN and everything else. In terms of stock up, stock down, Hank, I'll start with you with players. Who are some players that? For you, their stock is up, or players that you think that their stock is down in this first weekend, or you're just like, you're not sure where they're going to go?
I think you got to start with Peyton Manning, and I think his stock is way up. When you look at what he brought to Denver, and you know history of Peyton Manning, he looked like his old self. I think it's going to be exciting to watch him play all year long. I think RG3's stock is way up. I think that young man is going to do a lot for the Washington Redskins. Stock down, I got a little bit of surprise for you. My stock down after the first week was Matthew Stafford.
And let me
tell you why. I watched that game. You might bring
Phil T out on this one.
Well, I'm going to tell you now. Listen, I mean, when you're in the red zone, you're playing a team like the Rams, and you're pretty much moving the ball up and down the field, and then all of a sudden you have a brain fart and just start throwing the ball to the other team. You know, and I'm talking about unforced turnovers. It wasn't like he was being pressured. It's not like he didn't get a chance to get his reads. That you can't do that if you're trying to go to the next level, And you're at home. You should be relaxed. You've got the best receiver in the world to throw the ball to, and I don't know what he was thinking about, and that to me is a concern. And that was all on him. That wasn't somebody running a wrong route, somebody bouncing the ball off their hand, and that's a concern. That's a concern going forward. You can't do that.
And that's got to be a concern. I think the Chiefs had four starters either hurt or suspended on defense, so that might add a little bit more to what you were saying. What do you think about Matthew Stafford? I mean, Matt Ryan. You said Stafford and Ryan. Am I lying right?
I said Matthew Stafford.
Stafford.
What now?
So what do you So what do you think about that, Phil?
What do I think about Stafford being thumbs down, stock down by Mr. Hank?
He's a Detroit Lions guy, too, right?
Yeah, I got to agree. I got to agree, and it's not easy to agree, but, you know, I watched the game, and it was right there in my face, and I saw the same thing Hank saw. I saw a guy making poor decisions, throwing in double coverage. You know, I think back to what Eric Hamilton, our fantasy guru, said a couple of weeks ago on his first fantasy football cipher, which will be the second episode coming up again tomorrow. He predicted for Titus Young to have a good year as a second receiver, and obviously Titus didn't produce much on Sunday. And I think that's part of the challenge, man. We saw Pettigrew make some plays. We saw Johnson obviously make some plays, even Smith at the end. If throughout the game he was pretty consistent. But Burleson and Titus, man, they got to step up because in some ways Stafford's thinking, well, I can throw in two, three-man coverage to Kelvin because I can't trust these other guys to get open and make a play. So, you know, I can't be overly critical. A win is a win in this league, man. A win is a win. Saw that last year with the Giants. They got in with a 9-7 record and made noise. So, you know, being a Lions fan, you know, a bandwagon at that, okay, I'm excited they got a W because growing up, man, I saw the Lions find every way to lose. So to see them come out on the last second, last possession play, like on that pass to Smith, hey, I'll take it. I mean, tell me this. The fans in Cleveland, they would have loved to take a victory by any means necessary. So I'm not going to be overly critical against the Lions for getting a W.
And before we go to your stock upside down, I'll add to that. I think one of my challenges for really trying to understand the Lions were two things. I think they needed to figure out whether or not they were going to have the leadership emerge in the locker room to really get guys to focus and to eliminate. They don't have a lot of – they're great scoring, but they still feel like a team that doesn't have a lot of room for error. They can't afford those penalties that cost them some games last year. So whether or not the leadership would get them focused. And then Stafford – had a great year, but before that he was injury prone, off, and so was that going to be a blip or was that going to be the trend? And I think the first game still leaves that as a question because I wasn't sure. He's a very highly talented guy who, you know, I watched when he was playing in college at Georgia and said, this guy's got skills. But he can sometimes be that gunslinger and can think that he can put balls places where there's really not anything. He got a little far of any. And I felt like that might cost them in some games. They got away with it in this last game, and I agree with you, a win is a win. Phil, your stock up, stock down for players.
So my stock up, Peyton Manning and Brandon Marshall, that's the one I'll spend some time on. I've already given Peyton enough praise for this century.
You gave him enough love.
I did. Brandon Marshall, man, I mean, this reminds me of the cat that caught 21 balls. But he was in Denver a few years ago. one thing that threw me off is I'm watching that Bears game, right? And Cutler has thrown for 6 300-yard passing games. He's been in Chicago, I don't know, 2-3 years now. Why is that like top or second in franchise history?
Chicago, the only quarterback they probably had was Harbaugh and a couple others.
Exactly.
Doug Flutie.
So my up is Brandon Marshall. I think Brandon Marshall, man, is in for a huge season, and I'm so fortunate to have him in a couple of my leagues, fantasy leagues. So, yeah. Stock down. I'm going Ryan Fitzpatrick, and I'm coming back to the Bengals with Andy Dalton. I just, you know, man, we gave you a pass last year when you kind of folded in these moments against the Steelers and the Ravens. Not in year two. We can't do that. And so I was just a little disappointed, man, with the way that he played. You know, he missed Green on a couple of plays. I felt he checked down a bit too much. You know, I'm not going to be critical for taking a completion on any play, but I just didn't see that progression. And again, like you said, Devon opened up the show. It's just one game. We shouldn't, you know, get too excited up or down on one week of football. But I'm going to do that and say I'm disappointed with Dolphins so far.
And we'll come back to talk a little bit about the a little bit here in a minute. My stock up in number of the ones that you named in stock ups and stock downs, I was considering. I had a feeling a couple of those you were going to do, so I decided to go in a different direction to add to it. Was Mark Sanchez, and part of it is, you know, he's been under a lot of criticism, and I just felt like, and I picked the Jets to make the playoffs, and I felt like he was going to have a good year. And part of it was going to be in what I think what we saw with the Bills, which you'll see with some other teams, what I call the slash effect. This is what O'Donnell used to get this bump when they had slash because of what it does to the practice time for defenses today. And particularly since defenses don't hit as much, that even though Tebow might occupy, he might be in the field for 15 plays or 10 plays, Your preparation is not focused on Sanchez as much as it should be. I think that allows for him to get a little bump. But I also think, I mean, the surprise, and I didn't expect it. I thought the receiving corps, somebody would step up, but Stephen Hill was just a beast. But I think having a big target like that, having that security blanket, if he can continue to evolve, I think would be good. But I feel like he's moving in the right direction. And I feel like the Jets, for the first time, have a really good kind of demeanor. You know, Rex doesn't have him too high or too low. He's kind of keep him in the middle for that. And then Joe Flacco, you know, and RSG faithful. This is hard for two reasons. You know, I'm a Steeler fan, and this is like the enemy. But I got to give Flacco a little bit of credit. He might make me regret it. But, you know, he was under heat from his own teammates and things like that. And I feel like he went to the offseason, came out, and he really stepped up in his first game against a division rival and came together. My stock down, y'all already heard it, is Michael Vick. And part of it is, and you know I love Vick, but I just think at this stage in his career, these are not the kind of performances he should be having. He should not be having four interception performances. That's just not where he should be in his career. And I'm feeling like at this point, I think he can right it. I think he can right the ship, but I'm worried he's got to concentrate. This next game, he's got to Billy B. He's got to bump it up again and come back strong. But I don't like his disposition, and I'm hoping that will improve. I want to go back to Dalton. You know, Dalton's got a lot of praise last year for being calm, cool, studying. But, Phil, you hit something. The people that they failed to recognize is that Cincinnati didn't really beat teams with winning records. And particularly in the division, they folded. The defense was great against the Ravens and things, but he really didn't make plays. Are we seeing some sophomore slumps? We saw Cam struggle a little bit. Dalton struggled. Do you think Dalton is the kind of person who can right the ship, or do you think people will figure out – Dalton's not a guy with a big arm. Do you think – they'll begin to figure Dalton out?
Well, I mean, at the end of the day, Dalton did enough for that team last year that ran the football pretty good and had a great defense. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the biggest reason why they made the playoffs. And Dalton stayed away from turnovers. And he stayed away from costly decisions that – where the Bengals lost the field position game. And, I mean, he was artful of staying away from that last year. And when he didn't yesterday, we saw the results, man. They lost by 30 points, you know, or close to 30 points. So, in some ways, I think of Sanchez. The first couple of years, Sanchez – just kind of managed the game and did enough to get out of the way. Like, he got out of the way, okay? But the reason we were so frustrated with Sanchez last year is because we wanted him to make that progression. You know, want the Jets to just win in spite of him. We want the Jets to win because of him.
Yeah.
And, you know, in my opinion, this is what I'm looking for Dalton. You know, I mean, either stay where you're at, man, but don't take a step backwards. And that's what disappointed me the mostly. I saw him take a step backwards yesterday.
Okay. Okay. Well, one of the things I began to see a little bit over this weekend is we had the big thing around replacement officials. And there was a couple of things. There were some bad calls in the Green Bay game, the block in the back on the return for Green Bay almost cost San Francisco the game. I thought Harbaugh was going to have something pop out of him. When he didn't get that call, I was like, I thought he was about to lose all kinds of stuff on that. And so there were some bad calls. But I also thought that some of the announcers went out of their way to really ridicule the officials at times where I thought, well, you know, this just looked like a normal play. Yeah, they were a little slow getting the flag out and games kind of fast. But what were your opinions on, I guess, where we are with the replacement officials? What impact did you feel like they had this weekend? Overall, what do you think it had this weekend? Hank, maybe I'll hit with you to start off with.
Well, you know, we were fortunate in the first week that it didn't really come right down to, at least we didn't see outside of the Seattle Vikings game, which went to overtime, where it was going to come down to the last place. So they were fortunate. There were some awful calls. I've seen a couple. I've seen an illegal motion. I don't know how they missed it, you know, in the Lions game. And I'm pretty sure that went throughout the league. The game, to me, from what I've seen, even in preseason, the game is just too fast for these referees right now. I just hope it doesn't cost the team a game. I know they said they had signed contract with these referees until, you know, the fifth week of the season. My hope is that they get the refs back, you know, that they get the officials back, you know, before we get to really crunch time in the year. But I think the first couple of weeks, you know, unless we really see something ugly, and they're going to always, the media is going to make you know that they have replacement refs. They're going to let you know that. And what they're doing is they're giving the coaches something to feed into, which is unfortunate, you know. It's getting into the league, not negotiating.
Mm-hmm. Phil, what were your reactions?
Well, yeah, I think it's one of those things where it's the easy thing to do. It's the easy thing to do to pick on the replacement referees, you know, the guy who's the eighth grade teacher in Montana. I mean, let's on him. Let's pile on him, okay? I mean, this cat 6 months ago was not going to be in front of 80,000 people. So, and another thing is we have to realize is the permanent referees mess up too. It happens.
Yes.
It happens.
That's right.
And so, I think that the broadcasters, I won't say all, but most of them, they took every opportunity to say something tongue-in-cheek, whether it was implicitly or explicitly, about these referees. And, yeah, they made some mistakes. They made some mistakes. But overall, I just have a hard time being critical of folks that are stepping in, you know, so that we do have football. Because it could have been a lot worse. You know, it's not like we was out here, man, watching high school football and, you know, seeing one of these hack jobs mess up the local football game. No, I mean, these were referees that have, you know, been refs at high levels of college football in some situations in the NFL. And they didn't get it all right, but they didn't get it all wrong either.
I thought Al Michaels, boy, I don't know if you heard listen to that game. He was going so far up top, I thought somebody from the league might call him and say something. I mean, it was to the abusive kind of just tongue-in-cheek. And I was like, somebody from the league should call them and let them know they can handle this in a much different way. Because just for the things you just said, Phil, you know, some of these folks were teaching and doing everything, and they're doing the best they can to keep it safe. And I thought there were some crews that did an excellent job, and they didn't say anything when they did an excellent job. They only said something when they were acting crazy. And I heard one time it was in the San Diego game, I was watching the tape of that, and somebody mentioned that, you know, these guys have been working this for the – they lost – and they've actually done an excellent job. This guy was with Division III or whatever. I mean, it was the first time I heard an announcer saying, you know, these guys have actually been doing – this crew right here has been pretty good. And, you know, and like you said, there are times where some terrible calls when the regular refs were here and kind of do it. So for some reason, I know there's been some bad calls, but, hey, there were some bad calls last year. But I think it's been overblown a little bit. As y'all move to week two, Hank, what's a game that you're looking forward to watching in week two?
Well, you know, it's interesting you should ask that. but I'm looking forward to the Ravens and the Eagles. Now, you're looking at two quarterbacks. Go ahead,
Hank.
Listen, we're looking at two quarterbacks now that we've talked about with stock up and stock down. We're going to see, okay, Joe Flacco, is he as good as advertised or was it a fluke? Michael Vick, and where is he going to go and how is he going to play against that Ravens defense? I think you're going to find out a lot about both of these teams. Devon, you're going to find out a lot about where the Eagles are, and it's going to be a challenge for Andy Reid because they're going to come after Michael Vick. They're going to try to hurt him. About his gait or not, that's what he's going to be trying to run for his life, and he's going to have to, you know, make some decisions in that game. So that's going to be interesting. There's some folks out there that are calling this a Super Bowl preview.
And that was one I was going to zero in on. I got another one, but you hit one. That was one when I popped off the screen on me. I was like, this is going to tell a lot about both these teams. And
right.
When I was realizing my stock up, stock down pick, I was saying, you know, I'm either gonna lose a lot of my investment or not. But you hit. This is gonna be one because for a number of reasons they both need it. This is one to send a message to the rest of the league for both teams.
Mm-hmm.
Phil,
mm-hmm.
Which one are you looking forward to watching?
So, I'm looking forward to seeing the New Orleans Saints and the Carolina Panthers play this coming weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Both of these teams were expected to win their opening weekend games. They lost. So they're both entering this divisional matchup with 0-1 records. So I think starting out 0-2 in this division where you already have Tampa Bay coming out getting a W in the first week, then also you got Atlanta looking very good, getting a W in Kansas City the first week. They're going to be at home. You don't want to be in 0-2 in this division. You just don't want to be there. So I'm looking forward to this matchup. I think both teams have a lot to prove, both teams. You know, I think Carolina was kind of the sexy team to pick that didn't make the playoffs in 2011 that'll make it in 2012. So I think they have a lot to prove, and I think both these teams are going to be very motivated.
I think what's interesting is there's some must-win games so early in the season. You would think week two there shouldn't be, but you're right. That is a game, and I think you hit it right on the head.
I want winners.
That's going to be a must-win. Mine is Chicago-Green Bay. And I thought about it. I mean, I looked at the ones, both of the games that y'all talked about, and there's some great ones. There's some great matchups this week. But this, for a number of reasons, to take another loss within the conference, when you talk about fighting for a wild card spot, they've already lost San Francisco, Green Bay. This is then now a divisional game. For the Bears, there's motivation. You know, is their stock really up? You know, is that offense really where it needs to be? Are they that potent? Is Green Bay's defense as bad as San Francisco made them look? Can they afford to be 0-2? Chicago, this is a rivalry game, one of the oldest rivalries in sports. It has a lot of tenacity. Lovey has gone and won in that environment before. I think this was going to be a barn burner, and given that it kicks the week off, is going to be exciting. But I think right now, I mean, Green Bay's got a must win for a number of reasons. They're playing against two contenders, and they have already struggled. So that's mine.
You know, you mentioned Green Bay's defense. You know, they struggled last year when they opened the season against New Orleans and just basically had a shootout. So, you know, they could very well go 0-2, and then what happens, you know?
Yeah. That's going to be a game. And so that's something that I'm really want to pay attention to. Well, we're going to twist. We're going to go from the NFL to college football as part of our five on the black hand side.
Five on the black hand side.
There we go. It's five on the black hand side. I love this segment. This is where we have kind of five areas that we're trying to focus on a specific issue. This college football this weekend. My first one, and I'll toss this to you, Hank, about USC losing their number one ranking after the first weekend. Was that right?
They had no business with it in the first place. Okay. Next question. Listen, did anybody outside of this side of Pluto see Alabama play? That, you know what? They do stuff sometimes. Now, Grant, we're talking about this. They do stuff sometimes that irritates the living hell out of me. Now, why would you rank, you know, USC number one, okay, after Alabama, who beat arguably one of the best teams in college football last year, LSU, okay, shut them out in the national championship game, come and hammer my beloved Wolverines, okay, who did score on this team, by the way, which LSU didn't do. And then you put Matt Barkley, who's going to just be in a sitcom, you know, a year after he gets out of school, and all of a sudden you make them number one. I thought that was stupid. No, yeah, he was right. They should have been there in the first place.
Phil, you got to. What's your response to that? I think Hank has set that one down.
Cannot play with him. Cannot win with him. Cannot coach with him. Can't do it.
I got nothing after Hank. Give him the next one, too.
Hank, I'm going to go back to you, man. You hot. You hit the pocket. You over the corner. Just spot up, baby. Get down to that post. I'm going to actually go on the wing and feed it down to you in the post. I know you like playing bang with people in the post.
Okay,
what's up with the Big Ten, man? What's up with the Big Ten early on? You know me. We both Big Ten. All of us, you know, have some Big Ten ties. What's going on with the Big Ten?
Okay, let me tell you what's going on with the Big Ten, okay? You start off and you got nice, cold Ann Arbor, Michigan, you know, in January and February. This year probably being a little bit more of an exception. You got Nebraska down there in the heartland where, you know, it might get to maybe 30, 40 degrees if you're lucky in February. You got Illinois, you know, over here, and, you know, it's freezing in February. You got Wisconsin up here in the dairy land where you're at, you know, where it gets 2 feet of snow and y'all call it flurries. But then they go out here and they got to play the number one team in the nation in Dallas. That's Michigan. You got to go out to Los Angeles if you're Nebraska and play UCLA, a very much improved team. You got Illinois, who's trying to rebuild. They go out here and they play Arizona State, you know, another good team. Oregon State, who was beating some fine teams and beat USC in Oregon. All of these teams now, what I'm talking about, is they start the first, second week of the season where we start, where the Big Ten start inherently, they start slow, and they go on the road against very good teams and look bad. Now, this is for you, Devon. I still don't know what happened with Wisconsin. You know, they went to the Rose Bowl last year, but maybe teams from Oregon they just can't play with. But I digress. But I think that. But let's look at the Big Ten anyway. Okay, you got Ohio State, you got Penn State. You know, two perennial powerhouses, both of them on probation. Okay, Penn State is a non-factor for reasons we've already talked about ad nauseum in the offseason. You've got Ohio State that never leaves the state of Ohio in the month of September, okay? But nobody's going to talk about them because they're not going to play anybody. So the Big Ten is not going to look good. Right now, with all the super conferences, you know, around, you know, they'll be okay, but they're going to probably be at best the third or best conference team this year, the conference this year with these teams. The SEC first, the new Big 12. They can compete, but not this early in the year. I mean, you got these other schools that can play in the summertime and practice all year long. We can't do it.
And before I go to Phil on this, and the other thing I think, in pretty soon we'll see with Michigan as they move beyond Denard era, is that where the SEC has always been a great athletic conference, even historically. But where the Big Ten has always been great is that they've always, except when they battled the Pac-10, always won the quarterback battle. They've always had the elite quarterback. They've been a place that's produced quarterbacks. And then they've always had skilled players who were almost equal, but they also were great route runners, and then they had the running. But they always had that elite quarterback. And I feel as some of these Big Ten teams go back, and I think this is where SC gets to. SC has been running that pro-style offense. They've been killing the SEC. They've been eating them up. And part of it is the same thing. Every time they play against the SEC team, they usually have the elite quarterback. And they're usually to make plays as well as they have some of those athletes. And so I think as the Big Ten and as we get through some of this stuff, I think – and some of these teams are young, like a Michigan, and I think Ohio State's going to be going through the changes. I think they'll be better going forward. But, Phil, you're in the heartland. What's up with the Big Ten, man?
I'm speechless, man, because up in the air where the Big Ten considered arguably the best football conference in the that's not the case anymore. That obviously is not the case. So, you know, I like what Urban Meyer's doing in Ohio State. Football is a reactive sport. So I think that give Urban a couple of recruiting classes, and he's going to transform, and he's going to play an SEC style of ball, and the rest of the Big Ten's got to step up to match up. So, you know, I've lost confidence in the Big Ten in terms of I can appreciate the Big Ten for what it is right now, but come bowl time, it's just kind of like it's embarrassing, man. I mean, it's like being a low Division I team in basketball, and you run through your league to lose to a 12 seed team from the SEC, you know, by 20 points. So, yeah. I mean, I have friends from the South, man, that every time they get me on the phone, they tell me how good the SEC is, and I just have to sit there and take it.
And part of it is there are basically two I'm not going to say Nebraska you can add in the mix, but the two programs who can recruit nationally are Michigan and Ohio State. Historically, they've been able to recruit nationally. They can go into a lot of markets and get kids. They've just been able to do it. Now, and Michigan has been down, and Ohio State is on their way. You know, they got to go through things to get back. And I would add Nebraska can do some of that. They can go in and compete nationally in recruiting. And that's going, like you said, it's going to require somebody to force everybody else to step their game up. And I think Urban Meyer is probably that person to do it. It hurts me as well, man. My historical argument about the SEC thing is there, but after that beatdown Michigan took, I was just like, I'm done. I'm like, I'm riding down in the bayou now. My only other argument now is that the coaches that have been holding the SEC together both have their roots in the Big Ten. That's the only thing I've been running with right now until later. That's my only argument that I can go with.
But you can say this, though, Devon. I mean, let's mm-hmm. look at the Big Ten a minute. Now, you don't have that coaching stability that you once had in the Big Ten either.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Outside of Brett Bielema right now, and maybe even to a lesser extent, Mark D'Antonio. You've had a lot of turnover in the Big Ten. You don't have some of the historic coaches that we had in the past that held mm-hmm. those programs together. And that impacts your program. They impact your program a great deal. And there, we basically, when you look at the coaches, it's a young conference, even with the coaching staffs.
Yeah. And they got to get that continuity back. You know, they got to be able to. And I think having Urban Meyer here, having Hope, having Bielema being a little bit more stable Bo Pelini, having some of those folks who can create some identity over time, you know, I think is going to help. Is going to help the league a little bit. As you look at, a lot of times we have teams that make a late rush in the season who start out outside the top five and can end up in the top five. What team do you see playing right now that's outside the top five that you think can make a run to be moving towards that top five towards the end of the season? I'll go with you, Phil.
Michigan State. I think Michigan State.
Oh, man, you stole mine. All right, go ahead.
All right. They're going to win a tough game against the Irish this week, and we've just spoke about how weak, I'll just say it, how weak the Big Ten appears to be this year. And Michigan State, man, you know, I like the running back, Bell, and I like the defense that they're playing. They got some good corners. I mean, you always got good defensive linemen and linebackers at Michigan State, but they can cover people now. So Michigan State be my selection.
All right. Hank.
You know what? I it's going to pain me to say this, you know, but I'm going to say Ohio State. And let me tell you why. First of all, they don't have – they're on probation. There's no bowl game. They don't play anybody. The division that they're playing is weak. They can't play for the championship. But, however, I think Ohio State may lose one ball game this year. And you know who I think that's against. But I think that they can go way up in the – I think they can really go up in the rankings. I think they're a very talented football team. But because, you know, they don't play anybody, I think that they can go up in the top five and just sit there. We've seen crazier things happen. You remember it happened to Auburn several years ago where they were on probation. I think they finished in the top five.
And you both, I mean, we just had this big conversation about the Big Ten, and as I was looking at this and trying to get my teams, the teams that I thought had the best chance are actually in the Big Ten. And Michigan State was one because I think Michigan State has the most SEC-style team out of all the teams in the Big Ten. They got front four on both sides of their line. They're athletic. They got a front four. They got a front line on defense that's aggressive. Michigan State's always had that. You play Michigan State, you're going to come away hurt. Your team is not going to look – and we'll learn a lot this weekend when they play the Irish. But I think Michigan State has a big chance because there's games like this with the Irish, you know, in their schedule, they'll be able to get some wins that might push them up and there'll be some other losses. I think that – and like I said, I think you're right. Ohio State doesn't have anything to play for in a way that this in some ways could be their championship in terms of being able to be there. Another team, just because of how they're playing in – you know, and just they might not have a challenge until they play USC is UCLA. And what they're doing out there and how establishing their team. You know, they're outside, you know, the top, they're right, about 22 right now. But, you know, they have the ability to rack some wins up before, I think, playing against USC. And that would be the other team that I think could actually do this. In terms of Heisman candidates, do y'all have any folks that y'all think are surprise folks that you say are emerging as some of your candidates early on? I'll start with you, Phil.
Yeah, I'm going to stay at Michigan State. Le'Veon Bell, the big running back there. I like this kid, man. I like the way he runs the football. He's got that flair, that attitude. Makes me look like I'm looking at a young Jerome Bettis.
You're just stealing. Are you in my head, man? As you were describing him, I was saying Jerome Bettis. You know, I'm a stiff. I'm like, Tomlin, talk to the GM. We got to get this kid.
Right.
We have not replaced Jerome. I found our answer. But go ahead. I'm going to let you go, man. It's like you're in my head today. What is this? It's like that's what happens when you got a good number, a wingman on here catching the passes. We go back. I digress.
Hey, man. What? You know, Devon, all I can say, man, is
You play to win the game.
It hurts me to even pick a cap from state.
Yeah.
We don't mention Ohio State and Michigan State and on this show. That's blasphemy. Like, I can't believe it. But, you know, we are real sports guys. We got to keep it real. I'm with Bell, too. The cat, he runs. He scares you when he runs. You're like, he's going to hurt somebody. Like, defenders shy away from hitting this kid. Like, I ain't really trying to get in the way when he runs. That kid is a beast, and I think he's got enough big games. You know, they're going to play in the Irish this week, and that's a Heisman-like moment because people love the Irish. That's a Heisman-like moment for him, and if he clowns on the Irish, that's another thing in his belt to kind of keep him out there, and he's got some other big games. So I'm with you on that one. Hank, who do you have?
Well, you know what? Since we're being blasphemous, and we're all going to have to repent after this show, I might as well join the fray. I said Braxton Miller, and this is why. Yeah, because, man, let me tell you something. First of all, this kid is immensely talented. He showed that last year. But he's got the Urban Meyer effect, okay? And if you remember, right, Urban Meyer had Tim Tebow. This kid has got more talent than Tim Tebow does. And he's going to raise a lot of hell this year simply because, you know, Meyer's going to have them playing every game like it's their last. He's already shown a lot of flair. And, you know, when you start talking about Dark Horse Heisman, you're talking about the kid that's really showing a lot of flash and flair. I got to check the schedule. I don't know if Ohio State plays Michigan State this year. But if they do, that's one I can't wait to see.
Yeah, that's a physical a game. And it's crazy. We just had this conversation about the Big Ten, but some of the players we're talking about even come out and tells you the Big Ten has the potential to emerge later in the season as a conference that can rebound. There's some games to come up. What are some games, and I'll start with you, Hank, is there a game that you're looking to watch this weekend?
Yes, there is. I'm looking to see, you know, everybody then jumped on the USC bandwagon. Mm-hmm. Now, they go down and they play Stanford and Palo Alto this weekend.
Yes, yes.
And, you know, while, you know, they don't have Harbaugh, they don't have Luck anymore, that's still a Pac-10 opener for them, I believe. And I want to see, you know, if they're the real deal. Now, last year they lost a heartbreaker to Andrew Luck and them out in California at the Coliseum. So I want to see how they play this game, and I'm kind of looking forward to seeing that one.
Okay. Phil, what's your game?
So I'm looking at the Irish and Michigan State game.
Get out my head, man. Get out my head.
All right. So pretend I didn't say that. So I like the Alabama-Arkansas game. Now, I know a lot of people are down on Arkansas because they lost to, you know, a team from the Sun Belt Conference a few days ago. But assuming that their quarterback, Tyler Wilson, can play, watch out, man. I mean, Arkansas is at home, and this is the same team that we thought could be competitive with Alabama and LSU to begin the season anyway.
And Alabama going to blow their doors off, man. That's not a ball game. John L. Smith is their coach.
So you think John L. Smith can't get them ready? You remember Michigan lost to Appalachian State. They came back and got some victories together over time. They ended up beating Florida at the end of the year, you know, after having an embarrassing loss. So Phil, you think in Arkansas can rebound and pull themselves together for this big game?
Yeah, I'm not saying that they're going to beat Alabama, but I think it's going to be a closely contested.
I don't have facts to back this up.
So you don't have facts to back this up, but you think this could be a victory?
No, I don't. I don't have facts to back this up, but I can't hit you with this.
You play to win the game.
Did I mention that John L. Smith was Arkansas's coach?
You did, Hank.
I just wondered. I didn't know if I lost my connection or my cell went bad.
J. John L. Smith. It's like they refurbished, and that tells you the impact of a coach, right? Petrino had him running, and we'll see. Phil, even though I knew you went to go this way at Michigan State and Notre Dame, I think that's a huge thing because I think this is a statement game. It's a statement game for Michigan State in terms of are they on the rise and they really establishing themselves as really a program that's going to be representing the Big Ten, be that standard bearer for the Big Ten about how they need to play now. And I think Michigan State is trying to make a statement. They're tweeting about it. They're doing everything else. They're trying to get their swag up, right? And then you have Notre Dame. People have been hoping for Notre Dame. Notre Dame hasn't been good since the Backstreet Boys was on top. You know, I don't know who was on top of the charts when Notre Dame was good. I got generations of students. I got students who probably have never seen Notre Dame be really good. You know, and so people are waiting for them to see if this is really a year they can begin to put things together. And it really comes down to whether or not Notre Dame's defense can deal with that running game. And is Michigan State's defense, which I think has got some nastiness to it, can they really put it on Notre Dame? This is going to be a really good game because I believe Sparty got knocked out last year, 31-13. So they got some things they're trying to respond to. So I'm looking forward to that game. I think that's going to be a really good game. It's going to say a lot about both programs in terms of where they're going. It's a way for them to check. So I think those things are there. Is there anything else in college football, gentlemen, that you want to talk about, Hank, besides at some point the Big House will be relevant? Right?
You know what? Yeah, the thing is about it is the season is so young, but it's just exciting and it's just electric for them to get going, you know. Right around here we had Air Force around here. They almost gave me a heart attack, you know, because they were playing so undisciplined. But you know, the Big House on a Saturday, you know, if you're in any college town on a Saturday, you know, it's just electric. The atmosphere is electric. The air is electric. You know, I'm glad we're finally getting teed up, getting started.
There we go. This next segment we got is called In the News. We're going to hit some rapid fire on some really important topics. We got Hank in the building. So, Hank, we're going to let you hit a couple of these real quick with us with some input from Phil. Strasburg is on the shelf. I know y'all been talking about it on Inside the Park, 8:30. Wednesday, Central, 9:30 Eastern. Y'all got to listen to it. Hank, Mike, RJ, Strasburg on show. What's your opinion on that?
You know what? This pains me. It pains me for the Washington Nationals, and it pains me for Steven Strasburg. Because, look, this team here, they come back. The old Montreal Expos, this is an historic season for them, okay? They'll probably win a division. They're going to go to the playoffs. But their big dog, their big horse, is not going to be there with them. Not only does that hurt the team, that's hurting Strasburg. For those who don't know, he had Tommy John surgery. This is his first year back. And they pretty much limited him to 184 pitches this year. Okay, to give you some perspective, you know, if you take 54 innings of a game, 54 innings, not pitches, 54 innings, and you pitched all nine innings, that's about six games, okay? My take on it is that if you knew you were going to limit this kid and you're having the season that you're having as historic as it is, you sit him down, you stretch out his starts, and you give him a chance to pitch in the playoffs. See, baseball is not like a lot of other sports. When you're hot that year, you make the playoffs, and you try to win the whole thing. You may not come back. And some of the comments out of Washington was, well, we're going to be good for a long time. And that's a bold statement, especially in the National League and with some of the teams that's also trying to make moves. And psychologically, they had to shut him down because he could not focus because he knew he was going to be shut down. I think it's a monumental mistake by the Washington National front office. I don't think they did a good job of preparing for this. And I think it's going to cost them when they get to the playoffs.
And the thing about it, their other three starters are some of the top winners in Major League Baseball. That's my understanding, in that they actually, if you just look at those starters, They still had the best pitching staff in the major league. So your argument about being able to stretch his starts and sitting down has even more validity, that you could have gotten away with not starting him as often and saving him for a playoff run. Why do you think they didn't go that route?
You know what? They keep saying that, you know, first of all, I think they were very, you know, inexperienced in what they thought they were going to have this year. I mean, when you look at the National League East, you had the Philadelphia Phillies that were dominant over there. You had the Atlanta Braves. You know, you have the Miami Marlins, who were supposed to be a team this year. You had the Nats. Okay, the Nats probably thought they was going to make a good push. But for them to have the season this year, I think it's kind of surprised them. Steven Strasburg and Bryce Harper in the outfield, they brought these young kids up basically to sell tickets, and they end up being the real deal. So I think that what they thought was they had already gone down this road. I don't think they were proactive in their thinking, and I think it's going to cost them. I think also you got to understand what an ace pitcher does for your pitching staff. They're going to eat up innings. You know, they're going to save your bullpen, and they're going to be a different team without him down the stretch. And those are things I think that they didn't factor in, and they just kind of went along with this thing. And it's a shame because the Washington Nationals are finally relevant in baseball, and they picked their most historic season to make a blunder like this.
Phil, you want to have any input on this Strasburg on the shelf?
No.
There we go. I think Hank slammed it on. I love it. This would make Phil so great. Succinct. See, that's
he
the thing about
said, no. Hell, throw me a bone. Say, hell, give me a counterpoint. Tell them it was right. Anything. You know, yabba dabba do.
My style is impetuous. My decision is impregnable. And I'm just ferocious. I want your heart. I want to eat his children. Praise be to Allah.
Good enough.
Having that, I'm actually going to change orders. Having that, now that you kind of set the table, Andre Ward destroys Dawson. I mean, by all accounts, you know, Dawson, bad guy, bad Chad Dawson. I mean, he had some incredible series of wins at the light heavyweight ranks, came down to fight Andre Ward. Andre Ward had been this guy who won the Super Six. He fought against the top super middleweights in the world. Incredible fight. Phil, I know you had a chance to watch this fight on Saturday as I did. What were your impressions of Andre Ward in that fight?
Well, Andre Ward looked like a guy who was fighting at home, and he was. You know, mm-hmm. He's from Oakland. They were fighting in Oakland. And he was just dominant. Other than the first round, you know, Devon, you know, we were going back and forth, but I scored every round for Ward. I mean, he just was dominant. His offense was sharp. His defense was sharp. He was aggressive. And I've never seen Chad Dawson look so bad. You know, we had Doug Fisher on a few weeks ago. And just replayed the interview this past week when we were off. Doug Fisher, the editor of Ring Magazine and Ring TV, he told us to watch out for Ward, man. He told us that Ward was tough, and he wouldn't be surprised if he beat Chad. You know, I wouldn't have been surprised if he would have beaten Chad, but he whooped Chad. Okay,
that's right.
I mean, it was impressive, man, and so now, because Chad came down, Ward went up, so you really can't have this weight argument, but now we have to look at Ward in a whole different lens, because right now, we've been hungry for an American fighter, man. You know, he's a middleweight, but he looked very dominant, man, so... So I'm looking forward to his next fight. I hope it's not a rematch to Dawson, because nobody wants to see that. I don't want to see that.
Yeah, I think he beat him bad enough that can't even justify a rematch. And like I said, I think I agree with you. I thought he had the potential of winning it, going the distance. He displayed a level of power that I didn't expect him to display. you know, like breaking you down power, that, you know, something he added into his arsenal. So you can see that he's growing, you know, as a boxer. But he was, you know, he was just as dominant as, you know, you can be. And, you know, he's beating the other champions in the super middleweight. You got Carl Froch, who's got the IBF. You got Arthur Abraham, who he beat, who has the WBO. And so, you know, it's a question of, you know, is he the kind of guy, does he go down and fight, you know, someone like, you know, depends on what happened with the Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. fight against, was it Martinez they fight? You know, maybe the winner of that, do they find a catch weight? That could be a good fight. He's talked about possibly going up to light heavyweight. But this is a guy who is going to be a legitimate star. I mean, this is he's been catapulted into stardom. It's funny, like you said, his home, he's managed to do this in fight. He's fought a lot of fights in Oakland. In some ways, Oakland's become like this boxing place. So he hasn't really had to go to Vegas to the Boardwalk or Madison Square Garden. He's actually had the ability to fight a lot of fights in Oakland, even through the Super Six. So it's going to be interesting that they managed him very well. They've always kept him in his comfort zone, and you know, it's going to be interesting if he gets pulled out of that comfort zone.
I mean, this cat has never lost a fight.
Not even an amateur.
This cat has never lost a fight. Who else can we say that about? Very few, if any.
If any, has never lost a fight. I was surprised when I heard that he never lost a fight as an amateur. This guy's never lost a fight. He doesn't know what it feels like to go home with a loss. That's rare in boxing. So that's an amazing story.
Listen, we're talking about practice. Not a game. We're talking about practice.
I love this. They got a rapper, got a song out there about Allen Iverson. It's a great song. It ends with the practice thing for you hip-hop heads out there. Valentine in Red Sox said some crazy stuff to a reporter. Boston just has been unraveled since the chicken incident last year. Hank, what's going on in Boston? What are the Red Sox do? They don't ship people out. Is Valentine the next to go? What's happening in Boston?
Well, listen, you know, I'm telling you right now, it's over for him. We've got the game. When you listen to games now, Boston Red Sox game. I had the luxury this past week to visit Fenway Park and watch a ball game with the Red Sox played the Blue Jays. Bobby Valentine came out to change pitchers, and the Red Sox fans booed Bobby Valentine in Boston. I kid you not. As an objective observer, I'm like, this man is gone. You know, and the Boston fans, you know, and the Boston media can run you out of town. And I had a couple of people sitting around me say, they will run you out of town. Yeah, this is a one and done for Bobby Valentine. And it's really unfortunate that what's happened to the Red Sox. It's been a free fall since the collapse last year. And, you know, now they're basically in a position. We talked about this on Wednesday. You know, they're basically trying to figure out where their next steps are going to be. Do they rebuild? Do they try to reload? And it's just kind of sad because this time of the year you look for that Yankees Red Sox rivalry to mean something, and it don't mean nothing but playing out the string. So, you know, it's kind of unfortunate for a baseball fan, but if you're a Yankees fan, you're just grinning ear to ear.
We're going to get to the Yankees, but Hank, you know, this was kind of like the Kardashian marriage to Chris Humphries. We knew it was a bad idea before they said it was a bad idea, right? You know,
right,
we all know it was a bad idea. We're like, that's a bad idea. And then they are divorced. We're like, well, we all could have told you it was a bad idea.
Mm-hmm.
When they were talking about going Valentine, everybody thought that was a bad match. Is there something going on with the brass in Boston? I mean, in terms of their decision making?
Listen, I think what happened with Boston last year, I think that Boston was exposed. I think what you saw was the inmates running the asylum. And I think that's what happened down the stretch with them. I think that Terry Francona, now think about Terry Francona last year. He's the manager of the Boston Red Sox. This man then managed his team to the last, to two World Series championships, okay? They hadn't had a World Series championship since Babe Ruth played. You hear me? This man should have been idolized in Boston, and yet he could not get along with what was going on with those players. I think the players was given a lot more room. I think they were given a lot more latitude than they should have been. I don't think the front office really defended Francona that much. And at the end, the whole front office had to go. We won't probably know the whole story, but Theo Epstein ends up going to Chicago. Francona quits. You know, you go get Bobby Valentine, which God knows he probably was the only one who wanted the job, okay, because there's so much was going on. Then later on in the season, you got some thoroughbred ball players that just get shipped out for a bag of nickels. So there was a lot that went on with the Red Sox that, you know, we saw it last year on the field, and it just manifested itself this whole season. And, you know, if they were to put it in a soap opera, it would probably be, you know, one of the top shows, you know, on Showtime.
the real clubhouse of Boston.
Yeah, the real clubhouse of Boston, you know. I'd watch. I don't know about y'all. I'd DVR it.
I would go right after Basketball Wives. I'm going to continue to be hot, and I know if I go to Phil, he's going to give me one of one word answers because I can sense he know that you hot. You like Benny Johnson right now, so we're going to come right back to you in the post on the wing, set a screen for you because you mentioned the Yankees. Can they hold on?
The Yankees will hold on. I mean, I think it's real nice that, and again, we had this conversation on Wednesday night again, you know, on Inside the Park, where we were talking about, you know, the Tampa Bay Rays and the Baltimore Orioles being very good baseball stories. And I think those teams are going to make the playoffs, but there's just something about the Yankees come playoff time. Now, I just think that, you know, they're going to get themselves right. They're going to make the playoffs because they're a hated team, but they know how to win down the stretch. At least they know how to get to the playoffs. So I don't see a Yankees collapse, but I do see where those other two teams are going to push them. I think Tampa Bay probably more so than Baltimore, but Baltimore has truly been the story of the year, them and the Oakland A's.
Now, Phil, I don't know if you want to add anything on those two things that Hank said. Do you want to add something to it?
Well, everybody out there listening knows that I'm a Yankee fan.
I knew it. Here we go.
And so, Hank, I truly appreciate the endorsement that you think the Yanks will hold on. I'm just so nervous about their pitching rotation, man. And CeCe got busted up earlier last week against the O's. The O's put up four runs on him in the first three innings. And really, I've been hanging my hat all season that the rotation, at least that top spot for CeCe, was on hold. You know, CeCe could hold it down. And now the bullpen that had been so solid since Rivera went down earlier in the season, they've been shaky. So first we got to get healthy. And I said we got to get healthy. Cano came back. He's playing well. Teixeira came back for a half a second. Now he's back on the DL for at least another 10 games. I'll feel a lot better once A-Rod's got a few more games underneath his belt. And we're going to have to outscore people in the playoffs, mm-hmm. you know, and that's just not Yankee ball. It's pitching and being selective at the plate. But I don't think we can win that way this year.
Well, you got to understand, the Yankees are becoming an old team, okay? You've got some guys that's been over there for a while that's been doing some of the same things. They don't have the same pitching staff. They don't have what I would call a defined number two. They're going to struggle. But what the Yankees have done is they've managed. I see the Yankees in the same way I see Philadelphia from last year. I think they got enough, you know, push and enough to get to the playoffs. However, after getting to the playoffs, if they have to go against a Tampa Bay team that's proven that they can pitch, against a young Baltimore team that's proven they can pitch, you know, they're going to struggle. The Yankees never struggle scoring runs. It's where they get down here and they've got to go in the playoffs with their second, third option outside of CC Sabathia, that they end up losing series in the playoffs. And that's where it's going to hurt them. I think they get in, but I don't think they go very far.
And that's what you're talking about. Y'all got to check out Inside the Park tomorrow night, 8:30 Central, 9:30 Eastern. You see the multifaceted side of Hank Davis, one of the co-stars, but knows his football, knows his, but the baseball, he sent it all the way home. And I think y'all also need to go back and listen to some old stuff. When I came on at the beginning, I came on and talked about, you know, because I'm not the big baseball guy, and RJ took care of me when I was on the show. I sat in, I think, for you, Hank. It might have been for you, Hank, or Mike. Was it Mike
yeah.
I sat in for? I sat in, and I talked about the Orioles, and I talked about the manager, Buck, mm-hmm. in terms of he's like the architect.
Mm-hmm.
Like, wherever he goes, he builds. Now, they eventually fire him. He kind of like the I called him the Coach Collins of baseball. They never let him finish the job.
Right.
You know, and for some, either he overstays his welcome, but you know his teams are always going to play hard. They're always going to be in. I thought the Orioles had some young pieces. They had some pieces, and I talked about early on, and it's good to see that they're making this run, as well as I talked about the Nats with Davey Johnson. These are some old-school managers that know how to manage talent, and they know, you know, organizations, some of these small market teams like the Pirates and the Brewers, and you need managers like that that know how to develop players, grow players, run organizations. So it's good to see the Orioles. You know, I think growing up for most of us, Orioles, people don't remember the Orioles used to be a dominant team and used to always be making a run. And so it's good to see that franchise that was under Weaver, that Weaver used to kick and have a, you know, I used to love to watch those the highlights in the, on the Saturday mornings and always showing Weaver kicking and doing everything else. But they had a great team, and it's good to see them back. We're going to pay some bills and do our dog of the week.
Now we're going to get into our Resistance Digital dog of the week. Resistance Digital Solutions. Are you tired of running to the boys in blue? Are you done with listening to sales staff trying to upsell you technology that you don't need? We've all been there. So what did the real sports guys do? We contacted Resistance Digital Solutions for all our technology needs. They are not there to meet sales quotas or make profit margins. They simply just want to sell you what you need at a fair price. From iPads to PCs to flat screens, TVs, or intricate home theater systems, they customize every solution based on your needs. Check out their website at www.resistancedigital.com or email them at sales@resistancedigital.com for your custom technology solutions today.
All right, we're going to hit our Resistance Digital Dog of the Week. And, yes, if you want to connect with Resistance Digital, just go to realsportsguys.com, and you can click and get the link to it. It's a great thing. We definitely want to get Larry, the CEO, on here in the near future. They've been a great supporter of the show. All right, Phil T., your dog of the week.
We need more dogs.
RG3, man. Robert Griffin III for the Washington Redskins. Exceeded expectations. It was a beautiful thing to watch him play against the Saints on Sunday.
All right. Hank, our special guest, your dog of the week.
And thank you so much.
We need more dogs.
I got to tell you, you know, we've been talking a lot of football. We've been going all around the NCAA and the NFL. But I would be remiss if I didn't go back to my baseball roots. As I mentioned earlier, I had the privilege to be able to be in Boston, Massachusetts earlier this week, and I was able to take in a ball game at the historic Fenway Park. Fenway Park, 100 years old. Now, let me just put it this way. I'm a Detroit Tigers fan. But to be able to sit up in that old ballpark and actually witness and see with my own eyes the Green Monster, to see Pesky's Pole, to see Yawkey Way with my own eyes, to see where great players like Ted Williams played and Carlton Fisk, you know, just to be a baseball fan and to sit amidst, the Red Sox fans to hear that New England accent as they're saying, hot dog here, You know, it was just a real privilege for me to be there, and I enjoyed it just as a pure baseball fan. So just for that, Fenway Park, my dog of the week.
I can tell you, man, I took some students to Fenway. It was it's one of the great experiences. I had a chance to go watch the Red Sox play the Yankees in the early opener, one of their first series, and there's no better place than watching a baseball game at Fenway. It's electric, so I like that. My dog of the week, I'm going to take a little twist. We haven't talked about her much. My girl, Serena Williams, is incredible. She won the U.S. Open. She's won Wimbledon. She won the gold medal. Then she won the U.S. Open. She's been doing her thing. I got to throw a shout-out to Serena. She's holding it down for U.S. tennis, for men and women, and doing her thing. So Serena Williams is my dog of the week. All right. Did I get you, Phil T?
Oh, yeah, man. I was with RG3, but I will end you with
you
this.
Did, yeah.
We need more dogs.
You got you. So we got RG3. We got a little bit of that. We're going to go in. Phil, hit us with what's coming up here in the near future in the RSG Network.
So tomorrow we've got the second episode of the Fantasy Football Cypher with Eric Hamilton. Eric is going to get you up on your fantasy football picks coming in for week two, as well as give you some help on the IDP, Individual Defensive Players of Fantasy Football. The first episode was widely accepted. We appreciate all the positive feedback, and Eric has been in the lab. We're going to set up and get everything out on the podcast world tomorrow afternoon, so stay tuned. Obviously, tomorrow, the Inside the Park crew with Hank Davis, who's been sitting in with us today, as well as RJ and Mike, will be on tomorrow, Wednesday, at 8:30 Central, 9:30 Eastern. They're going to be talking about the Cincinnati Reds. Are they going to make the playoffs? The Pirates, are they really going to make the playoffs? As well as talk about some other relevant baseball news as the pennant races heat up.
All right. So, Hank, first of all, we want to thank you for being on the show with us tonight before we do the shutdown. And, you know, it's been a pleasure, brother. This is for the beginning, I said, this is a dream. So I'm glad we had a chance to get you on the Tuesday night show.
Well, thank you so much, and it has been my pleasure, and it's been a real quick 2 hours, man. It was a lot of fun.
We look forward to having you back here soon. We'll go to this call to shut down. We each going to talk about something real quick that is in the world of sports that's unsavory behavior or a trend that in sports that we just don't want to see anymore, that we just say it's time to shut it down. So I don't know if anybody has one. Phil, do you have something you want to shut down tonight?
Yeah, I want to shut down all the Randy Moss haters who wanted to put him in the same group of T.O. and vowed that he would never make another big play in the NFL. Randy caught a touchdown for the Giants this past weekend, so I'm shutting down all the Randy Moss haters.
That's right. Check the back of the jersey if you didn't see it. All right, Hank, anything you want to shut down in the world of sports that just annoys
you? Yes, I do. I want to shut down all of Roger Clemens' talk. Okay, he's 50 damn years old. And all we've been talking about is he's going to come back. He's going to come back. I got news for you. Let him just go. Let him go. Shut it down.
Oh, my goodness. And I want to shut down this. I want to shut down all the talk right now about the referees. It is what it is. They're here. You got to deal with it. Everybody's got to play with the same thing. Stop crying. Stop whining. If that's a problem, then pay the other refs. Don't want to hear no more about it. Shut it down. Until next week, RSG, baby, out.
I'm not laughing about it. You think this is funny? I take this serious.
I'm not.
I'm real serious. I put my heart and soul into this every single week.
All I'm saying is the camera shows
I'm just telling you right now what I do every single week. Every single week. I put my freaking heart and soul into this. I study my ass off. I don't go out there and laugh. It's not funny. Nothing's funny to me. I don't want to go out there and get embarrassed.